Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, social critic, and mentor, navigating the messy art of living and the complex beauty of relationships through these conversations that we need to have but often shy away from. It's another Tuesday. Elizabeth, where are we off to today?
Good afternoon. We are going to, skate into, dip our toes into, I'm not really sure what the right term is for it, but we're going to talk about parenting and how parenting, not styles as much, or how to parent, although I'd love to spend an hour talking about that. But today I want to talk about whether or not we should parent and why is it that less than half of Gen Z states that they want to be parents at all. And how did they come to that conclusion? And why and how have things changed so much? So that's the kind of the overarching theme for today. And I'm going to lay a couple questions out, and because I'd really like to hear other people's thoughts about this as well. But I got interested about the topic today because of conversations that we had in my classes this week as we come to the end of the quarter. And we're always kind of chatting, especially in the family psychology class, about what do their futures look like? What do they anticipate their lives will look like in 5 or 10 years? And I find it fascinating that when I, and again, I'm teaching in the psychology department, psychology/child development department. So there is a skew to that. And I would love to take these same questions out to the general population on campus. But in these classes, every quarter, never fails, all three of my classes, when I say, how many of you think you'd like to be parents, you know, have a long-term committed relationship and have a family someday? And 90% of the kids, young people, raise their hand. Absolutely. And I then follow that with, interestingly, statistically, less than half of you state outside of this classroom that you want to have children for a large variety of reasons. And so we start talking about that. So the students will say, I want to have children, I want to have a family. And then there's a giant addendum, but, and then they start listing all the things like, as much as I'd love to have a family and have children, I don't think that marriage is a viable institution anymore. I came from a family of divorce and my parents told me, don't trust another person with your life and make sure you can completely support yourself. Or I think that cohabitation is going to be better for me because I don't want to feel like I'm locked in or tied down or chattel to someone else. A lot of those big addendums to why they may not end up having a long-term committed relationship, even though, again, 90% of them every quarter for the 15 years I've been teaching will raise their hand and said, absolutely, that is what I dream and want for my life. The other things that are part of the addendum, not only do they feel the pressure culturally in their world, and their world is very much tied into social media, and so whatever the algorithms are that they're seeing day in and day out are telling them on a regular basis that marriage and long-term relationships are not really the thing or hip or something that are going to last forever. They're getting those messages every single day, which counters their desire to actually have these relationships. That's troubling. And then they're also, from their algorithms and their time on social media, getting these messages about how dangerous childbirth is or how scary it is to have a baby. And so that fear of actually going through the process of becoming a parent feels terrifying. And so that hinders their desire to make a family, fear-based. And then there's the other piece of, well, maybe there's other things that I can do. You know, the world is a dangerous place and it's probably not ethical to bring children into the world at this time. Those tend to be the three caveats to the, yes, I want this for my life, but here are the reasons why I probably won't do that. And if the psychology and child development students are telling us that these are their concerns. And imagine if you play that out to the greater population. When you talk to all the STEM students, they're getting probably the same amount of information in the algorithms. And they're also getting another piece to their story, which is, hey, what defines you in your life is the work that you do. And so your primary role in the world is to be productive and to find a job that will help you to make enough money so that you can participate in this expensive cultural experiment in which we all live. So this group of students or young people who don't spend time in the child development department and talk about families and family psychology and communication and all those fundamental things that are so important to understand so we can be successful as adults, they're not getting any of that information. What they're getting is this very narrow idea that as a human being in today's world, the most important thing you can do is to get yourself on the trajectory of a career path that puts you into a place of work, that gives you a feeling of status and acceptance and accomplishment and financial rewards. Like, that is it at the end of the day. And that's troubling because that's not the way things have always been. What we do for work or a living, yes, it contributes to our mental health and well-being. It's one of the tenets of good mental health is having meaningful work, but it certainly is not the most important of those pieces. And it's just one of four pieces to good mental health. But imagine from the time you're young, from the time you are first asked, what would you like to be when you grow up? And you say a T-Rex trainer. From that moment on, someone is saying to you, well, if you're going to be a T-Rex trainer, or if you're going to be a pilot, or if you're going to be a fireman, or if you're going to be a, you know, a venture capitalist, you better get on this track. You better get on this conveyor belt and make sure you're the best student and win the rewards and be at the best college and make sure that you get the best grades and make sure that you don't fumble once along the way, because if you do, that could be the end of your entire trajectory to T-Rex trainer. And the pressure those kids must feel from the first time they've said, I think I'd like to be that when I grow up, that's intense. That's too much. And then what happens to these young people, to my students that are graduating year after year, when they get out there with their fabulous pedigrees and degrees and internships, and they've put it all into place, and they're not happy. Not only are they not happy, they're depressed, they're lonely, they're anxious, they're isolated. And they're filling their days and time, that existential emptiness of, wait, I did everything right and I still feel so alone. So they're filling that existential emptiness with, well, you would think booze, because that's usually our first thought. They're just drinking themselves to death. But yes, they're doing a lot of that on campus, but it's really not that that's taking up the most of their time. The average Gen Z person today spends over 3 hours a day playing video games. And then they spend an average of 6 to 9 hours a day on their phones, doom scrolling or brain rotting, as they call it. That's not being alive. That's not even something to look forward to. And yet that has become kind of the story. I did all the things right. I got this great job. My productivity is great. I avoided getting married and getting into a relationship that might hurt my feelings or end up with me feeling heartbroken. I avoided that. And here I am with my video games and my job. And if I'm really feeling lonely, I might try out an AI boyfriend or girlfriend. You read about that, right?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Terrifying. And if you don't know what we're talking about, just go back to the New York Times a few weeks ago to the very long story of the young woman who has, maybe she still does, a very serious relationship with an AI bot. So here's where we are. And as you can imagine, I've been here with you for over 15 years. I have a giant place in my heart for the value of relationships and family. But if we don't do something collectively as a culture to try to push back against this narrative that family and relationships are a bad bet to make in your life, we're going to continue to see this rampant growth of mental health issues, just depression and anxiety. They'll continue to blow up because they are symptoms of being alone and lonely and empty in the world. We're going to continue to see a falling population, and those who are about economics say that that's a disaster for the success of the country. We're going to also see a continued sense of isolation. And there's never been a time where we need to feel more connected to each other in a community than right now. Because there's a lot of ways to get a lot of scary information all the time. And when we're fed scary information all the time, it really helps to have someone or some people that you can turn to who can say, I feel scared too, but let's bond together and we'll ride out the scary at the same time. So today's topic of conversation will be, is parenting still a viable choice? Because I know many of you out there in the middle of parenting. I know my daughter has my two grandchildren, 9 and 4. I watch my daughter and my son-in-law, and they're just moving all the time, the same way that we moved all the time when we were raising them. But they have more stress because they have greater costs, and also they are relying on two incomes to make sure that they can continue juggling everything that's going on. But on the other hand, they have more costs, but they also have more access to resources. And so why is it that right now we have a large percentage of the population saying parenting isn't worth my time or energy? And those of you who have raised kids, has it been worth your time and energy? Those of you who are already down the road and raised your kids, watching your grandchildren grow, would you do it all over again? And why? And what do you think has changed that has made it so unpalatable to take on the role of parent? I have a lot of ideas, but I'd love to hear yours as well. So this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and our number is 805-781-3875. Write that down, because at some point in the next hour, you're going to really want to call in, because hopefully I'm going to push a few buttons, because I am feeling the devil's advocate happening inside of me, because I have information that push both arguments, yes, have children, no, don't have children, pretty solidly. So be ready, because you're going to want to chime in. 805-781-3875. You can also be part of the conversation after the show by sending me an email to Elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. Or you can find me on Facebook and Instagram, and leave me there a message there as well. You can listen to our previous shows at kcbx.org, or podcast our show wherever it is you find podcasts. And I would recommend checking out Spotify, because as of last week, thank you, Jackie, we are now available on Spotify. Just look for A Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist, and you can subscribe and listen at your heart's content, and please share it with others. I think we're also on YouTube, which makes me feel extra fancy. So the audio is also on YouTube. So yes, a lot of ways to be part of this conversation, and I'd really like to have you be a part of our community as well. So we're going to take a quick break and come back and start this conversation about to parent or not to parent. That is the question, right here on Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
KCBX is here for you with vital coverage during complex times. Your support keeps the service strong. Give today at kcbx.org. And thanks.
Well, I think it's fine building jumbo planes, taking a ride on a cosmic train. Switch on summer from a slot machine. Just get what you want if you want, as you can get anything. I know we've come a long way, we're changing day to day, but tell me, where do the children play?
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, and our number is 805-781-3875. And as you'll notice, it's just me in the studio today, so the conversation is between me and you. So I'm looking forward to hearing your thoughts on this topic. Has it been worth your time and energy to parent? And if you are not parenting by choice, then has that choice also worked out well for you? A little side note on that, because it's a question on my final exam every quarter, is that when they study and talk to people who have chosen to be parents and those who have chosen not to be parents, they find that the costs and benefits really are the same. Which makes sense, because if you've had children, you can't imagine your life without them. And so you would be looking at those benefits. And if you chose not to have children, you can't really imagine life with them. And so you feel like your life pretty much turned out as it should. So the costs and benefits generally in those research studies end up to be about the same. But I'm just curious to know about your experience. And would you recommend parenting to others? Kind of like, would you write a Yelp review on parenting and give it 4 stars? But I want to start off with kind of one of the foundational arguments about not having children today that come up most often. There is actually a list of reasons that Gen Z, who's they're focusing on, but there's also the millennials. The millennials were actually the first generation that said, I don't think we're as excited to have children as previous generations. And they have, the birth rate has declined, the millennials, and they're far less likely to have more than one child. But the Gen Zs are really kind of stepping forward and saying, no, we really have no interest. As I said, 57% say that they probably will not have children. And that is by choice. And that's compared to 26% of those who were asked as little as 2 generations ago. So that's a giant change. But here's the first argument. It's not a safe place to bring children into the world at this time. It would be unethical to bring a child into this world that is on fire, environmentally, economically, politically, but mostly it's the climate devastation that these parents or these potential parents, these Gen Zs are saying would be the reason they'd be not wanting to bring children into the world, that they just can't, you know, they can't think of bringing their child into a world that's coming to an end. I hear that. But here's my counter, because remember I said devil's advocate thing today. Here's my counter to that. Every generation who's had children for multiple millennia has, I don't know if they've thought about it, but if they really thought about it, would want to think twice about bringing children into the world at that time. I mean, prior to the late 1800s, less than half of all children even lived into adulthood. So those odds as well, with all of the disease, with we had no vaccines or cures for, and living conditions and not access to, you know, food and clean air, that prevented a lot of children from surviving. And so if you were a parent in the, you know, 1800s and before, if you really thought of it, think, yeah, it's probably not a good bet. But they did. They had children. They had many children actually hedging their bets, because half were not going to make it into adulthood. Maybe that's not the only reason, but part of it. But then let's just zoom ahead into the early 1900s. And imagine that you're someone who's thinking about having a child at the beginning of the 1900s. And what you're facing then is World War One, the pandemic of 1918 and 19, so 100 years ago, right? We had that pandemic, the Spanish flu. And then it went into the crash of the market and into the Depression, and then into World War II. So if you had a child in 1900, basically the first 45, 46 years of their life probably weren't stellar, because things were not great. And we still were dealing with, you know, lack of access to medical treatments, lack of access to medications, worried about clean air, clean water, worried about housing. Well, we had the big housing boom post-World War II. So those first 46 years weren't great. So you probably would think twice if you really questioning, should I bring children to the world, especially after World War One and World War Two? You think this is not a safe world to be in. But then, all right, let's say you're thinking about having a child in the 1960s. I was born in 1961. And if my parents looked around, had the Red Scare after World War II, and a lot of people were losing their jobs and losing their livelihoods and losing their homes, and their neighbors were told to turn on each other. That was a fairly scary time to think about bringing children into the world, unless you fit into one narrow box of person. And then, of course, the 1960s, with one revolution after another, with the, you know, the Civil Rights Act, the American Indian Movement, the feminist movements, the all of the environmental movements, all of the, we didn't even talk about Silent Spring and Rachel Carson discovering that DDT was killing and poisoning people. So if we weren't having children because of the health of our crops, that would be something to think about. So then we go through the 1960s, and that seems like a scary time to bring children into the world. And then, you know, Brad and I grew up in the time where we were doing tests in case a nuclear bomb dropped. So we were diving under our desks and hanging on as if that was going to save us. So if parents were thinking about having children then, like, I don't know if this is good. That, you know, the atomic clock is pretty close to midnight. Probably not a good time to have children. I think you're getting my point without having to continue saying it, that every generation of parents, if they really thought about it, it's not a great time. And yes, climate change is real. And yes, things are changing. The environment is much different. But here's the thing. The world your child is born into becomes their normal. And so they accept what they are born into and they adapt and we adapt and things change. When we say to children, oh man, it was so much better when I was a kid, or it was so much cleaner or safer, or there was more opportunities, that's not of benefit at all to children because they don't know that world. They just know this world that they're in. And we have, in many cases, cleaner air and cleaner water than we did in the 1970s, thanks to the Environmental Protection Agency's Environmental Protection Act. Now, caveat to that, if we don't pay attention, we're going to continue losing those regulations that created a cleaner and safer place. Because remember Los Angeles in the 1970s, there were days you couldn't see across the valley because the smog, not fog, was so horrible. And the changes that were made to the Clean Air Act helped that. So yes, I'm saying to you, if your reasoning for not having a child at this time is because the world is unsafe and it's not a good time, I'm questioning that decision. You're going to have to find something else because I don't know if there's ever a perfect time to bring a child into the world. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and our number is 805-781-3875. And Elizabeth, thank you for calling in.
Of course. Hi, Elizabeth.
What a fortuitous name. We're just talking to each other.
Here. Yeah. Same name. You must be amazing.
All right. So you're a mom.
I'm a millennial parent. Yes, I'm a mom.
And so tell me why you chose to have children and what your experience has been like so far.
So I think I was born knowing I wanted to be a mom. That was how I would answer a question. What do you want to be when you grow up? A mom. Mm-hmm. And that stuck through college and beyond. So it just kind of was always in the cards for me. And I was so excited to be a mom. Mm-hmm. But I see how millennial parents are so stressed comparing themselves to what they see on social media. And I just think there's like this big wave of insecurity and comparison and just not being confident in their choice or how they're parenting. And I could talk about this forever.
Well, good then. I'm glad you called because I have questions.
And I work with moms too. So I see this day to day.
All right. So when it comes to the choice to parent, I also come up against, and maybe you have the same experience, that if you were to say in one, you know, my classes, I think my goal in life is to be a parent, you would take a lot of pushback about that as well. I mean, it's even difficult to say I want to be a parent and not get some
totally.
Sort of, yeah. So how do people overcome
it's kind
even
of that
piece?
Right, right. There's the, oh, but you have to have your career first. But to me, this is a career. And I think I feel lucky that I'm confident in that decision. Mm-hmm. And I know it's the hardest and most rewarding job. So I don't have any problem saying I'm a proud mom, stay-at-home mom that has also found a career and working with other moms.
See, and I wish, yeah, we do a whole show about that, that when we talk about, you know, prioritizing our career as mother, because that's, you know, I introduce myself that way. It doesn't mean that we just sit at home and watch the kids, that you can have a full life of other stimulating things. It's just how you parse out the time, I would imagine.
Definitely, definitely. I did catch myself telling my mom today, I don't have time for anything. And then I had to reframe and say, I'm doing the most important job in the world. And yes, I don't have time to do everything, but I have time to do a lot.
And so how,
this is how you prioritize your time.
Absolutely. And your finances, because part of my other devil's advocate piece, and I'll do that later, is how finances is another one of the reasons that people state they won't have children. I have a couple arguments against that as well. But because I have you on the phone, I'd like to know, how old is your child?
She's almost three.
She's almost three. So how is parenting what you expected or hoped it would be, and how is it not?
Good question. I think the newborn phase was the most surprising. When I would hear parents say, there's no time to take a shower or drink coffee, I'm like, yeah, right. And then it happened, and I had a high needs newborn, and there was no time for setting her down and taking a shower. And I'm like, oh, I get this. And the sleep deprivation. Mm-hmm. And once we got through that, I think the fulfillment that I felt was exactly what I imagined. And I feel lucky getting to say that, because I know that's not everyone's experience.
And why is
and
that not?
Feel like they've lost themselves. I think they just feel like they've lost themselves. And to me, I feel like this is always this. I found myself.
So where, what is being lost, I guess, would be the question. What do the new moms say they've lost?
That is a good question. I think they think not being able to go out with their friends or have the career or whatever it is that they feel like they're having to stop doing. Mm-hmm. But I think it's this fine balance, right? And I just think people think, if this, then I'll be happy. Once I buy the house, once I have the kid, once I climb the ladder, then I'll be happy. And I think there's a lot of people that probably shouldn't be parents. And I admire the ones that are confident in saying, you know what, I don't need to have kids.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I understand that as well. And I wonder if we need to do a better job launching young people into the role of adulthood, because what I'm hearing you say is that a lot of them have not made that transition from self-focused to other-focused.
Right, right. That's a good point. Mm-hmm. That's the work you're doing.
Yes. And so,
thank you.
I wonder what that would look like to have, you know, we do these ceremonies of when people get engaged and they kind of go through that process of, you know, letting go of their life as a single person and committing themselves to another, that I wonder if there needs to be another sort of coming of age or transition into parenthood. That,
right. That's sort of what I do for my work. I work at a place called New Mom School. So it's all these moms coming in with their 4-week-olds, and they're in the program for 8 weeks, and we kind of launch them into motherhood, and they leave feeling so much more confident, and they have a little community of people who get it. And so I think a need for that, and it's happening.
So what does it look like in a new mom's meeting? What kind of skills are you sharing with them?
It's a combination of an expert who comes in talking about sleep, or a sleep expert, a therapist talking about your relationship changes with your partner after baby, mm-hmm. postpartum mental health, an occupational therapist talking about tummy time, all these things that moms are like, I had no idea. I didn't know you should. Tummy time is the most important thing to do. Mm-hmm. And then just also support, talking about poops. How many poops a day does your baby poop? And this is so hard. And just having that support of someone you can commiserate with, but also share the joys with.
And so is this something that's unique to your area, or Baby Club something that are all over for new moms today? Is that a common resource?
New Mom School specifically was started in Costa Mesa and Newport Beach and is now franchised. And I think at the end of this year, there should be like 20 plus locations around the country.
Wow. So there is a need, and a need that's being filled by this.
Absolutely.
And what do you think as a mom, a millennial mom, would be the most helpful thing you could have heard or could hear as a parent today from other people?
I think finding your people and your community and trusting your mom instinct. I think we've lost that a little bit, and we don't trust our guts anymore. Mm-hmm. We're trusting TikTok and we're trusting Instagram, but we're not just looking within and trusting our gut.
I 100% agree. And one of my big challenges with Instagram or TikTok is that the people that are the influencers aren't done parenting yet. So they have no idea if they've done a good job.
Right. Right. Let's bring in the grandmas.
Yes, we need a whole grandma algorithm, the wise ladies.
We do. We sure do. And that's a common thing, though, too, that moms complain about. My mother-in-law says I shouldn't have blackout curtains, and why do we use swaddles? And it's so funny to hear.
The generational conflict.
Exactly.
Well, I think you're doing a fabulous job.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for doing all that you do, and I'm such a fan.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for taking the time to call on Elizabeth and squeeze your baby for me, and thanks for tuning in. Have a great day.
Okay.
This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and our number is 805-781-3875. And the topic on the table today is parenting, to parent or not to parent. What are your feelings about that? What are your feelings if you have chosen not to have children and if you have had children? And what do we do moving forward when we see less than half of the Gen Zs asked today whether or not they want to be parents? Less than half are saying, yeah, I think I will. The rest are saying, no, I'm going to pass. We're going to take a quick break and come back and continue this conversation right here on Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
KCBX is an essential resource in your daily life, delivering reliable news and programming to keep you informed. When you give today, your support helps KCBX provide critical coverage in the weeks and months ahead. Give at kcbx.org. And thanks.
Sometimes in our lives, we all have pain. We all have sorrow. But lean on me when you're not strong, and I'll be your friend. I'll help you carry on, for it won't be long till I'm gonna need somebody to lean on. Please swallow.
Our number is 805-781-3875 to be part of the conversation. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And I mentioned earlier, we're now on Spotify. So if you want to share our conversation with your friends, just have them look for A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist on Spotify, and you can subscribe and hear at your convenience. And maybe, because I'm old, you can pass it on to your young Gen Z friends who are parenting, and we can help them to feel a little more confident in what they're doing. Because I really think that that's one of our greatest challenges, is how do we bridge the generational gap of information? You know, how did grandmother's wisdom and even mother's wisdom get so pushed to the side so quickly? You know, access to information is great unless the information is not helpful or not correct. And although some of the grandma wisdom may not be the thing that is currently popular, it doesn't mean that there is no value in having tried and true practices shared. And I'm always concerned when I look at, you know, TikTok and Instagram, where people are spending, you know, more and more time listening to influencers or sharing information, and as Elizabeth mentioned, feeling that comparison and feeling like they're not doing it as well as they should. I think, one, that leads to an incredible amount of stress in this fear that we have to do everything right all of the time, which is unfortunate because no one does everything right all of the time, especially parents. And then how to move forward when we, you know, make a mistake or say something we didn't want to say or, you know, go a direction we didn't want to go. How do we correct our course and keep going forward? And how do parents maintain some level of authority in their house and not hand it over to their children? Because those are things that lead to this feeling of stress and burnout. And so I thought it was interesting that last year the U.S. Surgeon General put out kind of a warning article, and he was citing research from the American Psychological Institute that said that 48% of parents feel their stress is overwhelming, and that was compared to only 26% of parents of different generations, and talked about, you know, the stress that parents feel trying to raise children because they're worried about safety, they're worried about finances, they're worried about getting enough sleep. They're worried about, you know, not having enough time for themselves, and that and the feelings of burnout they have because they feel perpetually behind in their lives. And what I found interesting about that article and this idea that 48% of parents feel that their stress is overwhelming, the parenting job itself really hasn't changed because the hardest part are those first 3 years before kids are able to go to preschool easily. Those first 3 years really are stressful. You do lack sleep. You're not really sure who the human is that you're bringing into the world because all children have different personalities and different temperaments. And the expectation that we're going to be anything other than really tired and concerned that we're doing it right and worried about our finances is unfortunate. Like, there should be some sort of card that we send to all newly pregnant people that said, here's what you can expect. And side note, the book, What to Expect When You're Expecting, is very helpful. But also there should be the book that sent out and said, here are the things that will be normal. You probably won't have 3 hours a day or more to play video games. And you're not going to have 9 extra hours a day to doom scroll on your phone. You just aren't. And you're not going to have time to do the Vegas weekends or go out, you know, on buddy dates or have, you know, boys' night out. Like, those things probably aren't going to happen. And the fact that so many people feel burnt out or perpetually behind is because their expectation is that they're still going to be able to do those things once they have children. And I think that's a huge disservice. But to be more honest and say those first 3 years, you're not going to be able to do any of those things. That's the compromise. That's what you're giving up in order to raise children. But then it does change and things do come back around and things do settle in. But the idea that you're ever going to go back to or should go back to spending over 3 hours a day on video games really is harmful for many reasons. Because side note on the video game things and why I keep harping on it is one of the number one things that comes into premarital counseling and couples counseling today is the lack of time that couples have to spend for intimacy together, that they're tired. It's probably why they're not having kids, because they're not having sex. They're so busy with work because they've been told since they were young that the most important thing they should do is build their career before all else, which is also unfortunate. Because no one's going to become, well, maybe some people will, but most people aren't going to become a CEO or top of their game by the time they're 35 years old. And so if you're waiting to accomplish all of that before you have children, you know, that's not going to work out well. As a matter of fact, for those people who are over 50 today, who they Pew did research on why they chose not to have children, people over 50 today, most of them said, oh, it just didn't happen. I never found my partner. I was so busy working. It just didn't happen in my life. And that should be a cautionary tale. Like, that itself should be one of the biggest headlines. Let's talk to the people who didn't have children and thought they would have children and what happened. And most of it is because they were so busy at the task of working, they didn't put time into the task of, which it is, creating a healthy relationship. Our number is 805-781-3875. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. And Michael, thanks so much for calling in.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good. What's on your mind today?
I just happened to be listening today, and I wanted to sort of get your take on the idea that everyone in the United States, per se, most people as a rule, kind of grow up with this understanding that's it's expected of them that they'll grow up, meet someone, have a family, settle down, raise children, and the beat goes on.
Yes.
And it's how many people have children for that reason, just because you're supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always kind of wondered, what's the, you know, did you choose to do this? Did someone consciously, this is how I feel in my soul? Your last caller, definitely, that sounded like that was her. She knew that was her purpose
early on. Yes.
And, you know, does everyone feel that way, or is it rote? Does everybody just sort of grow up, you know, knowing that this is what they're going to do and supposed to, and that's what I'm supposed to do because they say to.
Mm-hmm.
And for those who don't, say, hey, hang on a second. I don't know if I'm selfless enough to have children, and do people contemplate it much? Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. that sort of thing.
You used a key word, selfless, too, because there is that stepping into a different way of being in the world, isn't there, when you become a parent?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And what I see, a theme I see repeated is that people, and not to be crass, and I don't mean to be, and God bless everyone who has had children, it absolutely must be the hardest work in the world.
Mm-hmm.
But what I hear is, I have to have children to be complete, and I have to have a child to feel fulfilled. Now you have a child. I'm so tired. I don't have time for anything. I don't want to talk to this kid. Get it away from me. Please take it for half an hour. And it's just that it's they want it. I don't want it anymore. And it's too late. So how about 20 years? We'll talk about it then, you know, that, you know, sort of thing. So, like, I don't know. Was that the person who, you know, should have had kids? And on the other side, there are so many children who are created and not wanted. That's what gives me pause, is that all of the people who are here and were not wanted, mm-hmm. and what happens to their lives, and mm-hmm. where do they go in life, and what happens, you know, as they age, that sort of thing. Anyhow, just curious to your take on all that.
Those are great. There's so many places to go, but Mike, I'm just curious, are you a father?
I am not.
Okay. So how do you feel about that choice? Because you sound pretty settled.
Well, actually, I kind of always thought about having children as an extension of that relationship, like finding your partner. I grew up very Christian. Mm-hmm. I have since morphed into a more sort of universal, I guess, love your neighbor kind of philosophy about spirituality, mm-hmm. more than just Christianity per se.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'd always kind of grown up feeling was that the children were an extension of that, and you'd find that relationship that was your home.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd found that a couple times, and the people left anyway.
Yeah.
So this eternal sort of beautiful relationship that's everlasting, and you die holding hands at a very old age with mm-hmm. your great grandchildren at your side, is kind of movie stuff. It's mm-hmm. kind of Hollywood fodder, and it's nothing to be counted upon. And for me, that's what happened. And it happened repeatedly enough times that I just kind of, I guess, maybe aged out of that idea of being a parent, or at least being a young parent. And mm-hmm. one of the comedians said, if I wait much longer to have kids, we'll all be in diapers at the same time. So,
yeah.
You know, that sort of thing. And it's just, yeah, and after a while, it felt like the choice had been made for me. Like, it just was not my path and was not for me. And looking back, I don't know about grateful, but because I really did want it at one point, from age zero to probably, you know, 25 or 30, I really wanted that. And then it just sort of got to be something that was in my past, that whole idea of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know that it was a conscious decision that it's never going to happen. I'm not going to do it no matter what. It was just kind of happened to me, I suppose.
Well, and it's interesting because that's a common, as I mentioned right before your call, that Pew Research has shown that for many people over the age of 50, it just didn't happen for them. And even though they had well-intentioned for that, and it sounded like relationships can also eluded you. And, you know, I think that there's a lot of social reasons for that. You know, this idea that we're supposed to be parents is definitely a social construct that has changed quite a bit since the 1970s and the whole second wave of feminism. And then the whole idea of marriage and what that looks like has changed. And so I think it's much more challenging for people. And I don't think it is more challenging for people to make those successful long-term committed relationships because we don't have like a strong social structure of a path. Here's what you do. And for some people, that was a blessing, right? To not have that strong social expectation that you would grow up and get married and have children. Because for the people who did not want that, and statistically, that's about 18% of the population. It's risen from 10 to 18% of the population of adults who have consciously said, no, I really like to be single and I don't want to have a family. I don't want to get married. But for everyone else, there's kind of this midpoint that you're kind of describing it. Hey, I had this want and this desire and relationships kind of eluded me. And all of a sudden I got to this point and it's not the deal now. And so now I have to kind of recalibrate who I am. And I think that's, you know, just as viable of a story, and how we recalibrate is a big part of it. Because there is statistically, because I like throwing my stats out, a third of the population does have that movie story that you're talking about, that had been married for over 50 years and they're blissfully in love and had that. Another third of the married population, of those married 50 and older, feel like, yeah, it worked out well. It wasn't, you know, I'm not blissful, but it was okay. And it's really just a third of the population that says, I wish I'd never gotten married. You know, it was terrible. So you've fallen into one of those three categories, or maybe just the 18% that, you know, just kind of ended up single.
Right. Right. And another element of it too, is a friend. A lot of my very close friends are women, and they have had, some of them have had children. And when they are pregnant and have the child, I almost internally say goodbye to them in a way, because I'm saying goodbye to the person that was.
Yes.
And vow to love the person that will be and that is now, because they're two different people.
Oh, thank you for saying that.
Because the person that we used to hang out with and go out and have fun and do whatever, be part of the social group, is not that person anymore. And I'm, you know, my best friend is a woman and she has a son and he's 13 now. And it's that, when before he came along, our lives are much different. And now that she's, I actually married her and her husband. I performed their ceremony when they got married and they had their child. She's a different person now. And it's like, and I love her just the same, but, you know, as much, but differently.
Not, and I appreciate,
same, but I, a different person.
I do appreciate that, because that is true, that things do have to change. I'm so glad you brought that up. And see, and Michael, thank you for taking the time to call, because you brought up some really important points. And there, as I mentioned to Elizabeth, who called earlier, I think we need to have some sort of actual ceremony, coming of age ceremonies into adulthood, coming of age ceremonies transition into parenthood, and really talk about what sacrifice looks like, and talk about, you know, what it means to have to let go of this version of who we were prior to having children, and then to be okay with that, and to be able to feel like you've fully grown into this next role. And that part of that reluctance to let go is, again, a lot of this social media information that is sent out every day, that we're supposed to be young and beautiful and fit and firm and active every second of our life. We're supposed to never change or grow old or be different. Or we're supposed to want to go party and be in Vegas. And we're supposed to actually outgrow those things. And then there is that beautiful kind of transition after the kids grow and you've changed and grown, that you have time to, you know, revisit those relationships, revisit those friendships, and to be able to talk about that natural progression. But it's interesting how reluctant people are to let go of things of their past, to let go of those things that really were important to them when they were young, and to be able to find parenting in a way that's important to them now. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and our number is 805-781-3875. And the conversation today is about parenting and what has changed in the generations of the millennials and the Zs to saying, hey, I don't think we're going to have children because I really want to focus more on myself and my interests. And you know what? That's okay to make that choice. But if we make that choice to have children, then what are some of the things that we can expect? And the question on the table was, if you're a parent, how has that worked out for you? Are you glad you made those choices and decisions, especially if you're a Gen Z or a millennial parent? And if you chose not to have children, how has that also worked out for you as well? 805-781-3875. And Stephen, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Did you say Stephen?
Yes. Hello. You're on the air.
Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi. What's your question?
Well, it's not a question. You and I were born in the same year, 1961.
Okay.
And I was listening to you, and I'm an empty nester. My wife and I had two children, and my daughter, 37, married, and I have one grandbaby. And then my son is 30 and married, and they have two dogs so far.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that I guess gets me a little bit upset is how the young people are parenting their children.
Mm-hmm.
Because the person answers the phone, I shared with her that whoever's listening is probably not going to like what I'm going to say, because I think child abuse has reversed and it's become more parent abuse, and the parents aren't able to really be parents and do the right thing because it's the right thing to do for the children earlier in their years before they have extreme bad habits.
Mm. So kind of the old school type of parenting is what you're talking about, kind of the authoritarian type of parenting. And it's interesting because parenting styles do change generation to generation. One generation will say it's all, we really need to, right now the phrase is gentle parenting, that we really want to be gentle with children, make sure they get their needs met. We don't want them to feel hurt or sad or traumatized. And that's usually a reflection or the, reverse of the generation before. The years that I raised my children, it was called the parent way. And it was about, hey, as a parent, I lead the charge in the family. Here are the rules. Here are the expectations. Here are the demands we have. And you need to kind of follow along with those rules. And then the next generation is like, that felt too hard. So I think we're going to not say no to our children. And then the next generation right now, there's a group of parents that are about free range parenting. And then we want our kids to have freedom to be able to walk to the park and enjoy, getting themselves to school or walking to the corner market. And then the next generation says, oh, that was too much freedom. And so I think we're constantly in an ebb and flow from generation to generation of what is the best and most important way to parent children. And I think that aside from that conversation, which is important, of the parenting skills, I'm really focused on today, what does it take to make that decision or not to make that decision to have children? And I kind of wanted to push back in devil's advocate against this idea that it's not a great, the world is unsafe and we shouldn't have children, or climate change is ruining the world, we shouldn't have children, or it costs too much money to have children. Those reasons that are given most often for not, I wanted to push back a bit against that. So let's talk about the cost piece, because currently, just in the last couple of weeks, Brookings Institute came out with a revised cost of what it would be to raise children today, 2015. If the child's born in 2015, they're 17 in 2032. And they predicted it's going to cost $310,605 for middle income families. And that's not including college. And that's a giant jump from the estimate from the USDA that said it's going to be $233,000, which is still a lot of money. But the interesting statistic was that the biggest cost was housing, 32%. And 32% of income of families is going towards housing. And that has become just like a real challenge for wanting to put together or build a family. And so What's also interesting is that since the pandemic and also after 2008, we've seen many more homes that are multi-generational. And maybe one of the conversations we should be having, instead of trying to continue to have small nuclear families taking on the burden of raising children on their own, the conversations that we should be having more are, how do we do multi-generational families where we share the cost of housing and we share the duties of child rearing so that parents can work and grandparents can stay involved and kids can have a lot of adults helping to look after them, and then the costs that are prohibitive for having a family go down. That's my nudge for the day, is that how do we rethink the parenting work? Instead of saying kids today or parents today are not doing enough or they should try harder or they're feeling overwhelmed and stressed, why don't we, instead of expecting the government to come in and offer more childcare or the government to come in and have more preschool or to come in and make sure that, you know, there's paid time off, because that hasn't happened and we've been fighting for that since 1978, hasn't changed. And so instead of continuing to push against that, why don't we talk about how we restructure multi-generational homes in a way that suits families, because there's a lot of ways we can do it, a lot of communication that goes into it, a lot of kind of rules put into place, but then you're serving multi-purposes. One, helping children have more adults in their life. Two, giving adults more camaraderie, more companionship, because isolation and loneliness are the two biggest mental health issues that we have today. And then number three, we're sharing the costs. And so we can't, if we can't cap costs, then we need to pool our resources. So I'd love you to think about that and have a conversation about that and see if maybe that shifts how Gen Zs feel a bit about their role as parents into the future. And then also, we really need to talk about this idea that we're going to be able to be adults and play over 3 hours of video games a day and be on our phone 9 hours a day, because those are addictive behaviors. Last thoughts. This has been A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and I'd love you to be part of the conversation now after the show by sending me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You can leave me a message on Instagram or on Facebook. You can find us on Spotify and wherever else you get your podcasts. You can support the station by donating and making sure that we're a part of your community year after year. Thank you for tuning in and supporting Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
I know a girl, she puts the color inside of my world, but she's just like a maze where all of the walls all continually change, and I've done all I can to stand on the steps with my heart in my hand. Now I'm starting to see, maybe it's got nothing to do with me. Fathers, be good to your daughters. Daughters will love like you do. Girls, become lovers who turn into mothers. So mothers, be good to your daughters too. Oh, you see that skin? It's the same she's been standing in since the day she saw him walking away. Now she's left cleaning up the mess he made. So fathers, be good to your daughters. Daughters.